going, everybody? Welcome to Lights Out Wrestling. To those of you checking us out for the first time, thanks so much. To those of you sticking with us, thanks as well. It is Sunday, January 26th, the day of the Royal Rumble. We have Royal Rumble predictions coming up for you, but first, let's get into some news from the week. We had footage surfaced from the Superstars taping of Dolph Ziggler and Ryback's match in which Dolph Ziggler suffered a concussion, putting him out for the past couple weeks. Now, I talked a couple weeks ago about this being Ryback's fault and him being unsafe in the ring, and on the footage itself, you can't really see what happens. Basically, the camera pans away to a crowd shot, and we come back, and Dolph Ziggler is sluggish. He ducks a clothesline, and he rolls out of the ring and is in an obvious discomfort or pain or confusion. And people are saying this footage is proof that it's not Ryback's fault, and I don't really see it as that way, but I don't want to dwell on it. I talked a lot about Ryback a couple weeks ago and how I dislike the guy, and if he's going to be unsafe in the ring, he needs to either go back down and figure himself out or be released. It's not up to me to decide what happens to Ryback, and I don't want to go off on a rant on him, but fans seem to be changing their perspective a little bit, changing their tune because of Ryback's new gimmick where he goes on Twitter, he trolls the internet wrestling community, and then he deletes his tweets. And he has acknowledged this. He is known for doing this now, and it's known as a work and a gimmick. So it doesn't change my opinion on the guy. I still don't want to see a guy who's unsafe in the ring, but that's just me. If you're a fan of Ryback, go ahead and be a fan of Ryback. That's completely fine. It's not up to me to decide who you guys like and who you dislike. When it also comes to Dolph Ziggler, he might be cleared for the Royal Rumble itself. He's going to get tested beforehand. He had an interview with The Miz, and it's posted online, and he seems fine. He seems okay. He's back in the gym. He's working out, so hopefully he can be a surprise entrant into the Rumble, and that would be a good return for him. And also, news surfaced that the reason that Dolph Ziggler's push was kind of halted and cut short was comments he made in a radio interview about Randy Orton being handed everything to him on a silver platter. And this has kind of been a known thing and a gimmick that they've used in promos itself when it comes to Orton. They've talked about how he pretty much has a silver spoon in his mouth and he hasn't really had to work hard. He had the raw talent and he was handed everything. So it's kind of strange that this would be a reason for them to halt Ziggler's push. And news came out about this when the radio interview happened itself. People were pretty interested in what Dolph Ziggler had to say because it wasn't a promo and it was seen as a shoot. But it's kind of a ridiculous reason to take the wind out of someone, especially what's happened to him since then, suffering two concussions in less than a year, losing the World Heavyweight Championship, and basically being pushed to the wayside while a bunch of old people come back, and Dolph is just, he's not the same guy right now. Hopefully he can get back to the point that he was at. Also, when it comes to concussions, Daniel Bryan suffered one last week on Raw, and he was cleared to wrestle this week, but he did not. He cut a promo in the ring, and he now has a match scheduled for the Rumble, a singles match with Bray Wyatt. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about if Daniel Bryan's going to be in the Rumble and so forth. News has also come forth that Sting may be signing with WWE, and they might be close to a deal for either WrestleMania or the year leading up to next year's WrestleMania. I'm pretty indifferent about the situation. Not a big Sting fan at this point in his career. He's pretty over the hill, and there's a lot of things they could do with this year's WrestleMania. It could be a very stacked card, and if you stick Sting in there with Undertaker, it would have to be a very smoke and mirrors match, and they would have to rely a lot on crowd reaction. But I'm not against it. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Sting. I'm just indifferent. You know, it's not a big deal. I'm middle of the road. And yeah, I would like to see the guy go out on a high note in his career and wrestle his first match with the WWE, but it's not a huge deal to me. Also, regarding TNA, they parted ways with OVW, their developmental territory, and now they don't have one. Of course, OVW used to be associated with WWE for quite a long time, but they cut a deal with TNA a while ago, and I don't see this as necessarily a bad thing for TNA. It might also be a sign of the times. You know, they are trying to cut costs, but having a territory like that is a good way to be able to pick and choose guys that you're paying a very small amount of money and bring them up to your main roster if you see something in them. That being said, they can also do that with the indie promotions, and they have done that with Ring of Honor recently. They picked the American Wolves, Eddie Edwards, and Davey Richards, who had a shot with WWE, and it didn't pan out. So now they're with TNA, and it's a good reason for fans to watch TNA who are fans of those guys. They didn't quite cut it in their match with The Ascension on NXT television a few weeks ago. So they decided to pass on them, and now they're with TNA. That happens. But I don't know if this is necessarily a bad thing or a good thing for TNA not having a territory. We'll see what happens and if this is a money issue. Everything always comes down to money. It's always a question of money when it comes to TNA, but we'll talk about them later on in the show and their so-called pay-per-view this week. Ultimate Warrior is going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, which was reported on Raw. And this is a good sign for them, burying the hatchet for business. It's what's best for business. You can't hold grudges in wrestling for your entire life, or you're going to go to the grave regretting it. Because a lot of these guys die young without saying what's on their mind, or without taking that last chance, that last opportunity to get that limelight once again. Because I feel like as soon as these guys get that limelight, they're at the top of the business, they wanna have that feeling that they first felt. And I imagine that for Warrior, it was a very confusing time for him, seeing as drugs were a huge deal back then, steroids were a huge deal back then. And this guy probably wasn't completely self-aware of what was going on back then, and he's probably had a lot of time to get perspective and think about his life. And I think Vince McMahon has too, and they both want to bury the hatchet on the situation. Maybe Vince more for business, and Warrior more to get that last shot and get on television again and basically get the last word. They're going to do a Warrior DVD to kind of debunk the first DVD that they did, which was pretty much a smear campaign on the Warrior. I'm not a big fan of the Warrior. It's not a nostalgia thing for me. I understand if it is for you. I didn't grow up in that era. I didn't watch wrestling when I was 3 or 4. I watched wrestling when I was 11. So the Warrior, going back in time and looking at a guy like that, he doesn't really interest me, and there's nothing special about him to me. I you know, the high energy thing is cool and interesting in a way, but the nostalgia factor is not there for me. You know, the nostalgia factor is there for me with, you know, 98 to 2000. So if they induct someone else into the Hall of Fame, I might be interested in watching the ceremony. Also, there have been reports for quite a while about Jeff Jarrett trying to start his own wrestling promotion with reportedly Toby Keith, of all people, who is a multimillionaire. He can throw pretty much as much money as he wants around, maybe not as much as Vince McMahon, who is a millionaire that should be a billionaire, to quote CM Punk. But, you know, I don't see this as a thing. A lot of people think this is going to happen. And if it does happen, I can't see it being a huge thing, a huge deal, unless Jeff Jarrett wants to be the biggest thing on the market, the most innovative thing on the market, and he has a TV deal right away, a pay-per-view deal right away, and some interesting talent that people want to see. Apparently, he's been in talks with AAA in Mexico to have some of their talent maybe work for him and also work for AAA. I don't know of anybody that would garner a big interest over here in the States and Canada on television when it comes to that. Also, apparently AJ Styles has been waiting in the wayworks for this promotion. That's what reports have said. None of those have been confirmed, but we'll see what happens if AJ Styles ends up being the face of Jeff Jarrett's new promotion. I don't see Jeff Jarrett coming out with a promotion that is innovative, interesting, and captures the not only the market on wrestling, but also the mainstream potential market that wrestling could have. So we'll see what happens. We'll stay in touch with that story. We're going to talk today about Batista returning to WWE television on Monday Night Raw. We're going to discuss the Royal Rumble match itself and the pay-per-view in depth, booking through Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania. We're going to do a full NXT review, a full review of TNA's so-called pay-per-view this week, and we're going to talk about much, much more. You guys can send me your questions via email, justinchasejones@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @LightsOutJones, twitter.com/LightsOutJones. You can follow us on Facebook now for updates, facebook.com/LightsOutWrestling. YouTube channel is youtube.com/JustinChaseJones. That theme song you heard about 8 or 9 minutes ago is by Sabretooth, Calgary Punk Band, sabretooth-punk.bandcamp.com for their albums. Download them for cheap. Let's get into Raw, and then let's talk about the Royal Rumble.
Superstars that can electrify a crowd like Batista.
Monday Night Raw this week came to us live from Dayton, Ohio. We got an Authority promo to start off, plugging the Royal Rumble and welcoming back Batista, but they were interrupted by Randy Orton, who comes out and asks, just who the hell do they think they are? Stephanie responds back with the same exact question and says that more people are watching than ever because of the WWE Network. Of course, that's beside the 8.1 rating they got during the Attitude Era. And the 33 million people who watched Hogan and Andre battle for the title on Main Event in 1988. Regardless, what did Randy do with all these people watching? What he did was repeat storylines from 7 years ago by beating up John Cena's dad. Cole calls the Randy Orton-Kofi Kingston match from last week one of the biggest upsets in Raw history. And I've heard a lot of people talk about this. A lot of people are upset by the way Kofi's been booked here. A lot of people are saying that booking him as a fluke doesn't really add anything to this, and of course it doesn't. It's just something for Randy Orton to do until the Royal Rumble, because this John Cena storyline is just honestly lackluster and boring to most people. So Randy needs someone to wrestle leading up to the Rumble, so they give him Kofi Kingston because they have somewhat of a history. And a lot of people are saying that, well, Kofi pinned Randy Orton before, so why couldn't they make this more of a threat? Well, when you go back, Kofi Kingston only pinned Randy Orton on a fast count with Mark Cuban being the special guest referee. Yes, the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban. And that being said, Kofi has lost 21 of his last 27 matches, or something around there. He lost to Alexander Rusev a couple weeks ago. And of course, they did even Steven booking there, and he got the win a couple weeks later on NXT. But still, this guy loses way more matches than he wins. So yeah, it was a fluke that he beat Randy Orton. And that's how he should be booked, because he is a loser. And that might sound a little harsh to most people, but Kofi, you know, look at his win-loss record. He is a loser, and yeah, he's booked that way, but what is this guy going to do? Is he going to do anything special in the near future? No. Is this going to lead to him having a title shot? No. They've got way too many people in the title picture for Kofi Kingston to have a shot at Randy Orton's title. This was just something for him to do until the end of the show. Steph calls John Cena's dad a helpless old man. And I'm going to predict right now, Stephanie McMahon facing John Cena's dad at WrestleMania 30. Orton points out how the deck is stacked against him with the likes of Batista, Brock, and Cena to deal with. This makes me think he's going to win at the Rumble, that he's going to beat John Cena, and he's going to take that title into Elimination Chamber and hopefully lose it there. I don't really care either way. I don't mind if Cena has the title or if Orton has the title, because right now we are just waiting for WrestleMania at this point. Like, or Elimination Chamber. It seems like Elimination Chamber is going to be a better pay-per-view despite the Rumble. I'm excited for the Royal Rumble because I love the Rumble match. It's always fun to watch, and I can go back and watch any Rumble and have a good time. Even the bad ones are pretty entertaining. You know, the ones where they're less of the who's who of wrestling and more of the who's that of wrestling, those Rumbles. Especially some recent ones, like the 40-man Royal Rumble. Man, that was pretty garbagey in my opinion. Triple H goes on to say that they believe in him, and he's the complete package despite his faults. He's lost faith in himself, and losses to the likes of Kofi Kingston are proof of that, so he gives him a chance to set things right against Kofi and possibly Cena later in the night as they show a camera shot of the backstage entrance. So John Cena's not there yet. You know, if the World Heavyweight Champion, or anybody else at my job, you know, there's not a World Heavyweight Champion at my job, thankfully, that would just be weird if someone was walking around with a championship belt and nobody knew why. That'd be quite strange. But if anybody beat up my dad, I think that the next day or the next week, I'd be early to work. And usually Cena is early to work, so I don't know what's going on here. Maybe he had to be at the hospital and fly in on his private jet, or he was just getting a little love from his woman there. I have no idea. Anyways, Batista's music hits, and he comes out looking like a drug dealer from a European gangster film. He's got sunglasses on indoors. In a, you know, quite a well-lit arena, I suppose. I guess he hasn't had his pyro go off in some years, so that might be a reason for it. But he reminds me of a lot of the characters from this movie, Pusher, if anybody's seen that. Look it up on IMDb and maybe watch the trailer on YouTube. He looks like a background character in a drug-based, gritty action movie. He's got the sunglasses, he's got the skinny jeans, and he's got the jacket, the tight jacket with no shirt on underneath it. The man looks ridiculous, despite his tattoos as well. I've never liked the guy very much, but man, he's not doing himself any favors. He does look like a star, though. I'll give him that. I don't hate the guy. I'm pretty indifferent. I'm glad that there's a new face to see every week. That's always good, but I'm sure that will wear off soon enough. Anyway, there's some Batista chants. He kisses the ring, and of course, this is a sign of respect, but if this was anyone else besides Batista, I'd predict a staph infection. But given his sexual history, I'm sure he'll be fine. Triple H and Stephanie leave them alone in the ring. Randy goes for a handshake, and Dave cuts a weak promo. Obviously, he's not quite comfortable yet. He says it doesn't matter if it's Brock, Cena, or Orton. He's going to headline WrestleMania. I know a lot of people are predicting that, but we'll talk about that later in the show with Royal Rumble predictions booking through WrestleMania. We'll do a big segment on that. Next up, we got the Rhodes Brothers with Big E taking on the Shield in a six-man tag match. In this match, we have the Rumble kickoff match announced. It's a title match between the New Age Outlaws and Cody and Goldust. And this is on the pre-show, so I think the title won't change hands, but we'll see what happens. We'll talk about that later on the show. Also, Jim Duggan, Ric Flair, and Shawn Michaels will be your pre-show announce team. That should be pretty interesting. And it's interesting here, it gets pointed out that the New Age Outlaws get a title match based on their win on SmackDown against the Tag Team Champions because they pinned them. Meanwhile, Rey and The Big Show did the same thing December 16th on Raw, and the next night, of course, SmackDown is taped the next night, Harper and Rowan pinned the Tag Team Champions on SmackDown. So why didn't those guys get a title shot? Why don't we see a four-way at the Royal Rumble with these teams? I'm sure that would be decent. Regardless, I'm sure it will tie into a storyline with Triple H and that whole thing with CM Punk and et cetera and so forth and so on. This was the fourth match recently that Cody and Goldust have taken the loss in, including six-man tags. Meanwhile, The Shield have won three in a row. So they're teasing dissension on both sides, and they're making it seem like The Shield is solid right now after everything that's happened to them. And they're making it seem that Cody and Goldust are not. So that makes me think, just the way that WWE books, that The Shield are going to be the ones to break up. Because it's obvious that they can't contain Roman Reigns, and he's ready to go. He's just a star in the making. He's already a star. As soon as he turns babyface, he's going to get that huge pop, and he's going to be the next big thing. But in this match, Cody's got this high-flying style that's fusing with an old-school style of wrestling. And he's kind of he's developing as a babyface. He's learning how to be a better babyface in the ring. So all he has to do is translate to promos and, you know, just being that guy when he's not in the ring. And I'm sure he can do that. He's still relatively young. But he's kind of reminding me of a young Shawn Michaels a little bit. And I know a lot of people would not appreciate that comparison because they're huge Shawn Michaels fans and they think he's the best ever. But if you watch Cody wrestle, you probably will understand what I'm saying. Because if you're not a Cody fan, then you're probably not paying attention to him in the ring, because he's been around for a long time, and it's hard for him to get over with people who haven't liked him in the first place. But the fact that he is learning to be a better babyface in his ring work and in general, I think that will help him out in the long run, because he is a great heel. He's always been a great heel. I love the stuff he did with Rey Mysterio a few years ago, and I don't like Rey Mysterio, so maybe that has a lot to do with it. Maybe I enjoyed him ripping off Rey's mask and calling him hideous and running around putting paper bags on everybody's head. But even then, when he had the mustache, I thought he was amazing as well. But Reigns sells Cody's disaster kick like a goddamn champ in this match. He takes it like a champ and sells it like a champ. And that's very important. You can sell a move very well, but when it looks like someone really kicks you in the face, that makes the sell a lot better. Big E gets a big pop as he gets the tag in. Goldust takes out Rollins on the outside. Big E hits a big overhead belly-to-belly suplex on Ambrose. I love that. I like Big E in the ring. He hasn't really impressed me that much yet, but the fact that he's starting to do the overhead belly-to-belly, that sells it for me. That's followed by a splash, and the pin is broken up at two by Roman Reigns, who hits an amazing Superman punch on Cody Rhodes, and then the spear on Goldust. I gotta say, I would definitely pay to see a future match of Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes, with Rhodes being the heel and Reigns being the face. I would definitely pay to see that. And then Rollins goes on to hit the blackout on Big E, the curb stomp, for the three count. A lot of people are talking about that, saying some pretty sketchy things, but we're not going to go there on this show this week. Let's keep it relatively clean, guys. I'm sure I'll get upset about something later and go off on that, but Daniel Bryan comes out to a big reception, says some people don't see him as the face of the company, kind of a jab at everybody else, but JBL goes on to call him an ugly face if he was the face of the company. I don't know if he knew his microphone was on for that one. It seemed kind of out of line and stupid from JBL. Daniel Bryan says he had a plan all along to get close to the Wyatts and take them down from the inside, and that he doesn't follow anyone, let alone the Buzzards, except for those 42 people he follows on Twitter. The truth is, he exposed Bray Wyatt. He announces a match between the two at the Royal Rumble, and that kind of signals that he's not in the Rumble. We'll talk about that a little bit later. We'll go off on a bit of a rant. A wild Wyatt appears. He says Daniel Bryan flew right back into the cage. And then the only reason people look up to him is because they chose to kneel. He tells Daniel Bryan to go home and hug his mother, kiss her, tell her that he loves her, and apologize because everything that happens to him is now his fault. Just awesome. This guy is great. I can't say enough about this guy's promos. And I think he's getting there when it comes to ring work. I don't know what's going to come out of this match at the Royal Rumble. I don't know where Wyatt's going to go after that or where Daniel Bryan's going to go after that, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I really hope they have something lined up for him and he can keep this momentum going, because he's just awesome and I love watching him week to week. Next up, bell-to-bell time on Fandango facing Xavier Woods in the ring. 68 seconds between the first bell Fandango hitting the leg drop and getting the 1-2-3 to the final bell. What was the point of having a 68-second match? You know, I blinked and this was over. And I like Fandango. And I've been saying this for weeks now. I don't want to turn off the TV or change the channel when Fandango's on my screen because he's taking on Xavier Woods or R-Truth or Brodus Clay or the Great Khali in a short match. It's great that he got the win. But after this, we got a shot, another shot of Emma from NXT, who's obviously going to make her debut soon and probably feud with Summer Rae. That'll be great. Emma's really good. There's a documentary up, a short documentary, about 7 minutes, on YouTube about this girl. She's very awesome, very charming, very young. I'll post a link to that for you guys if you're on YouTube, or you can check it out on my Twitter account, at Lights Out Jones. Next up, Brad, Maddox, and Kane argue over whose idea it was to bring Batista back. Steph makes her way in and begins forcing Kane to apologize to CM Punk for last week on SmackDown. She says it's bad enough that Orton took out Cena's dad, an old helpless man, but God forbid that Kane did a wrestling move to a professional wrestler. Jesus Christ, how does that make any sense at all? Things like that just boggle my mind. Kane comes out after the break and calls out CM Punk, apologizes twice, and then Punk attacks him. Kind of a dick move. This makes Maddox set up a match between Billy Gunn and Punk with Road Dogg on commentary. Thank God Dogg's on commentary. He goes on to explain that they're the Outlaws, they're hunting for gold, and no one should be surprised that they basically turned heel. Road Dogg distracts Punk, and Billy takes advantage. Punk gets Billy in the sleeper, but it's reversed into a side suplex. Billy reverses a GTS later and goes for an elderly Ziggler dropkick for two. Now, if you guys haven't heard anyone compare Billy Gunn to Dolph Ziggler, then you're probably deaf, or you can't read, or several other things. You know, it's been Mr. Perfect or Billy Gunn or a combination of the two. But when you watch Billy work in the ring, I know he's a lot older now, but when you watch him in the ring and you watch certain moves that he does, it's just, it's quite obvious that Ziggler takes a lot of influence, and a lot of people would say that he rips him off. But I like it. You know, it's great to see Billy in the ring again. You know, he's not the best, but I don't have a problem with seeing him in a singles match with CM Punk. I think it's great. Punk goes on to do the crotch chop and a high knee to Gunn, and then he high kicks him out of the ring and looks like he's going to suicide dive him, but then he goes out to attack Road Dogg, and the moment that he attacked Dogg was right when this man, this 40-some-year-old man, was using the word hashtag. What have we come to, people? We're seeing the New Age Outlaws again, and they look like they're in good shape. They do look a little older. But I don't want to say them. I don't want to hear them say words like hashtag. Just, you know, let's just move on from that. Punk goes for his signature comeback moves and gets a two count, and then he goes up for the Macho Man elbow, but Road Dogg pulls him out of the ring, and then Punk hits the suicide dive on Road Dogg. Billy goes for a Famouser, but gets the GTS for three, and then Kane announces that Punk is number one in the Royal Rumble. So that obviously means that CM Punk will do a strong showing in the Rumble, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, and obviously that he won't win. But this is all leading up to a Triple H and CM Punk match at WrestleMania 30, or that's what's been said. Plans are subject to change, of course, when it comes to WrestleMania. But yeah, that shouldn't be bad. Hopefully we don't see a Kane and CM Punk match at the Elimination Chamber, though. I'm sure we could all do without that. Rey Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio having a rematch up next. And, man, for a match that went over like a big tub of shit on Friday Night SmackDown, they sure gave them a lot of time live on Monday Night Raw. And this was a good match. The first time I watched it, I did not give a single shit because I thought it would just be, you know, typical stuff from them and the crowd would be dead and I couldn't get into it. You know, fans can't get into Alberto Del Rio, obviously, but I can't get into Rey Mysterio. I look at him a lot like I look at Kurt Angle. And they're different, of course, because Kurt has had a lot of different injuries than Rey has. You know, Rey's, he's obviously had a lot of lower body injuries, and Kurt's had a lot of upper body injuries and a lot of other problems in general. I don't know if Rey's had any of those problems. If he has, he's hit him well from us. But when I watch Kurt Angle wrestle, he's such a good wrestler, and so is Rey Mysterio. But I just fear for both of them every time they're in the ring, because I feel like the next thing they're going to do is going to end their career. But this was a decent match, that being said. Just too many head kicks, though. Now, I talked about concussions a few weeks ago, and if everybody's going to be constantly getting concussions, maybe we should cut down on the head kicks. because they look great, but they don't look great, and they don't get a reaction when you got 5 or 6 in every fucking match. And they make me nervous now. I fear for these guys, especially a guy who had just came back from a concussion in Alberto Del Rio, and I'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But I said this last week, and the one thing I can't get into about Rey Mysterio matches is this finishing move, the 619, and how he has to set up for it. I mean, there were two spots in this match while Del Rio was going for an Alabama Slam, it looked like, and an electric chair, and they were both reversed into attempts at the 619, one hit and one didn't. He eventually reversed into a cross arm breaker, and Ray tapped instantly. So would I, Ray. So would I. But I psychologically, it doesn't make any sense to me, because it happens a lot on moves that these guys don't even really do, and they just go for them because Rey Mysterio's in the ring. They think, this guy's small, I'm going to pick him up for an Alabama Slam. No. They wouldn't do that. This guy's small, I'm going to pick him up for an electric chair. Nothing will happen. I don't scout. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But that's just nitpicking, I suppose. You know, kids are into Ray. A lot of people are into Ray. Not enough to cheer for him during a fucking match, though. The crowd was completely dead for this. Batista's music hits. He comes out and gives Del Rio a spinebuster, followed by a power bomb. Not a Batista bomb, because he didn't sit out on it because of his skinny jeans. They would have ripped, or he would have torn something. You know, pretty ridiculous for this man to be wearing skinny jeans coming down to the ring to do a wrestling move. But yeah, that was another thing, going back to the concussions. This guy, Del Rio, just came back from a concussion, and I'm sure he didn't think it was as serious as they thought it was, but they have to do this whole test and keep you out for a little while, just to be sure. But this guy's taking a massive head bump from a giant beast who hasn't been in the ring in quite a while. What, 4 years? Man, I fear for these guys in the future. I don't know what they're going to do after 3 concussions and they have to retire. I'm sure they'll be a lot safer. But this match is rumored for Elimination Chamber, Del Rio and Batista. I don't know if it's going to happen now because no one's really reacted to it. If no one is interested, it probably won't happen at this point because they have so many options. But, you know, it would be a good squash for Batista. Or it could turn into a good match because Del Rio's a guy who can really go. And he's proved it time and time again at pay-per-views. That's where his money is. He puts on really good matches at pay-per-views. Even when people aren't interested in the angle, he can still put on a good match. And those matches with Ziggler last year were some of the more underrated matches of the year. They didn't make any top 10 lists or any top 5 lists, but I thought they were great. They were entertaining. They were emotionally investing. And those guys went out there and gave it their all. They told a fucking story in the ring. And that's sometimes what matters more than anything else. Apparently, Old School Raw was last week, according to this bumper video we got of a replay of that Old School Raw segment with Brock and Big Show. Whoops. Show says he still doesn't like Lesnar. Does a Paul Heyman impression. A little bit of comedy from the big man. Oh, he's so versatile. Just great. So good he did it twice. And the second time he did it, he fucked it up. He says, let's not waste any time, brah. You know, come at me, brah. Come on, brah. A wild Paul Heyman appears, followed by a wild Brock Lesnar. Slowly they walk down the aisle, but then they back off. And Big Show calls them back again, which causes him to decide that he's going to fight now. I don't know. I guess Brock is a goldfish and he forgot what he was doing 5 seconds ago. They cause a ruckus in the ring and Brock gets tossed out, bumps like a madman again, and then he decimates the announce table without breaking it. He tosses the monitors all over the place and JBL's hat. Oh, my hat! He comes back in and he gets scared back out because Big Show takes the chair away from him. And then when he's backing out of the ring, he trips over the monitor, and he recovers by throwing the monitor into the ring at Big Show. And then they both exchange, see you Sundays. Yeah, I'll be there. I'm pretty excited for this match, actually. I think it might be one of the better matches. Not better matches on the card, but it might be one of the better segments, because every time Brock's in there, he is unpredictable. He seems so real and so raw. I'm not saying he seems green, because obviously he's not. He's a great wrestler, and people don't give him credit for that. I think he's gonna make this segment very, very entertaining. And we should all maybe watch out for the surprise of the Rumble here. I mean, maybe not in sense of like returns or exciting things happening during the Rumble match itself, but maybe just an angle development and moving Brock along and building him up. I think this might be one of the better segments leading into Elimination Chamber overall. Next up, we had a match with the Wyatts and the Usos. This was a really good match, actually. It was one of those matches where all four guys went out there and they were rough in the ring. They hit each other real hard. They wrestled it out. They didn't let the crowd dictate what happened during the match. They didn't try to make the crowd cheer for them. Wyatt cut a little promo in the middle of the match to get fans to kind of remember that he's taking on Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. And then Bryan ran out, and he attacked Bray Wyatt from behind. He kicked Rowan in the face. The referee did not see it. So Harper got distracted, and one of the Usos got the roll-up pin on Harper, followed by Yes Chance. Very decent wrestling segment. I enjoyed this very much. Would watch it again. But unfortunately, we ended off the show with Randy Headlock Orton facing Kofi Kingston in his return match to even the card, so to speak, and send Kofi back where he belongs. And that's nowhere, I suppose. Poor Kofi. Hopefully this guy will have a meaningful feud somewhere in the future. I listened to Kofi Kingston on Colt Cabana's podcast. I think it was earlier last year, and he was talking to Kofi and saying, man, you're set for life. With your gimmick and the way kids like you, there's nothing they could do to take that away from you, and people are always going to love you. Look at him now. In the past year, he has went from someone that people like every time he comes out because he's going to do crazy flips and he's super energetic to someone that people could give less of a shit about. And yeah, I like the guy. He's a nice guy. He's a smart guy. He's a hard worker. But he has not done anything in the past year. He's actually seemed to decline in his ring quality over the past year. And even, you know, I talk about watching wrestling with my girlfriend quite a bit on this show. But she's only been watching for about a year. And the first time she saw Kofi come out and he did his crazy flips and shit, and she had barely ever watched a wrestling match before, she instantly took a shining to this guy. And now when he comes out, she goes instantly to her iPhone to do other things. And it's not the WWE app, I'll tell you that much, even though she has it on her phone. And that's telling right there. When casual fans, the ones that like a guy like Kofi Kingston, are turned off by him now, you know, that's speaking volumes about what's happened to this guy. And thankfully, we didn't get a 20-minute wrestling match here like we got last week on Raw, or a 16-minute wrestling match that seemed like an hour. We only got a few minutes of wrestling. And then Cena came out and forced the DQ. He ran from the outside in his shorts and his t-shirt, even though it was freezing outside. And this man shows up in the last 5 minutes of Monday Night Raw. Actually, after Raw had hit the 3-hour mark, this man showed up. I think it was right at the 3-hour mark. I was waiting because I'm looking at the clock while I'm watching Raw live, and it ends at 9 o'clock here, and it was 9 o'clock, and Cena was running down to the ring. So I'm thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a great ending to Monday Night Raw. They're not going to do the big brawl with everyone in the Rumble. They actually save that for SmackDown. Spoiler alert. But they're going to end it with this angle that no one could give a fuck about, and they didn't advance it whatsoever. These guys fought back and forth for a little while, throwing punches every once in a while. They made their way throughout the arena, and then Randy Orton escaped in the passenger seat of a random van. No explanation. I don't think there was an explanation on SmackDown. Someone posted a Craigslist ad after this, which I saw on the internet. Randy Orton asking for a getaway driver for the Royal Rumble. And that was just fucking hilarious. Kudos to whoever posted that and whoever has shared it. Just, that is just great. But how does this advance an angle? Especially with John Cena's reaction after Orton escapes. He just shrugs into the camera. And then later on, he's taking selfies in the crowd. Hey man, your dad has a broken orbital bone from one of your peers and foes. You might want to advance this angle and make people excited about it for the Royal Rumble. I could not give less of a shit about this match at this point. Randy Orton can be very good in the ring, and so can John Cena, given the right circumstances. When Orton was working with Daniel Bryan earlier last year, they put on great matches. Cena had one of the matches of the year with Punk on Raw last year, and he had some other very good matches, one with Daniel Bryan as well. So you put these guys in the ring with the right person and give them the right angle and a good amount of heat, and they can really perform. But you put them in a shit angle with no stips, no, you know, basically no buildup. The buildup that happened was very haphazard, and it's happened before. No one's going to care. We have 3 matches other than the Rumble on this Royal Rumble card. SmackDown has already happened. No other matches have been announced. We have 1 for the pre-show. We have a tag title match on the pre-show. No other titles are up for grabs. I just don't understand. And that's what we're going to talk about next, guys. ...2014's Royal Rumble comes to us live from Pittsburgh on January 26th, this Sunday, today, as I record this segment. This is the full card, guys. This is all we got. In the pre-show, we have a tag title match with the New Age Outlaws and the Rhodes Brothers. That's on the pre-show, which is hosted by Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Shawn Michaels, and Ric Flair, all Royal Rumble winners in their own right. Then we have Daniel Bryan taking on Bray Wyatt in a singles match. No stipulations. Then we have Brock Lesnar taking on The Big Show in a singles match. No stipulations. Then we have Randy Orton taking on John Cena in a World Heavyweight Championship title match. No stipulations. Other than the winner has to win by pinfall or submission. I don't know if this means no DQ. That hasn't been really specified or explained to anyone. It seems like it might be that way, and we might get a fucked finish out of this one. I don't know what's going to happen when it comes to these matches. We have 3 matches, other than the Royal Rumble match itself, announced for this Royal Rumble pay-per-view, which had 6 weeks to build up towards. A lot of excuses lately have been this is either the rough season for WWE when it comes to storylines and pay-per-views and talent, and usually they pick things up for WrestleMania. Another excuse has been they have to compete with football. Well, I'll tell you what. This is not an excuse anymore. We are 2 months away. Well, not 2 months. 2 pay-per-views away from WrestleMania 30. The 30th anniversary, quote-unquote. It's not the 30th anniversary. It's the 30th WrestleMania. We are 2 pay-per-views away. And the Royal Rumble is one of the most important pay-per-views when it comes to WWE. And wrestling in general. Because that Rumble match is basically an all-star game, seemingly, for the WWE to showcase their talent, to get all those entrances, all of that music, advance a bunch of angles at once. But that being said, we can still have a good card to go along with it. Why not? So far for the Royal Rumble match itself, these are the contestants announced. We have Batista, Alberto Del Rio, Biggie Langston, The Miz, R-Truth, Xavier Woods, Kofi Kingston, Cody Rhodes, Goldust, Rey Mysterio, Fandango, CM Punk, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Luke Harper, Eric Rowan, Damian Sandow, and The Usos. That leaves 10 spots to fill for the Royal Rumble itself. So who is going to fill those spots? We have Zack Ryder. I think Zack Ryder might have actually been announced at this point. So that makes 9 spots. I'm not totally 100% sure on that, but I heard a rumor that Zack Ryder will be in the Royal Rumble. That's great for him that he's still on the roster. Hopefully he gets a little bit of a pop and gets eliminated within 10 seconds. So who else will join this Royal Rumble? We know that Daniel Bryan has not been announced to be in the Rumble, and it seemed like on Raw he kind of made it clear that he's not going to be in the match. That all that's going to happen in this Rumble for him is to take on Bray Wyatt one-on-one. I don't know if that's going to be the case. I think that Daniel Bryan will make a surprise entrance into the Royal Rumble. And a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are outraged and upset that Daniel Bryan has not been announced so far for the Royal Rumble. And they have all the right to be so. Because Daniel Bryan is getting the craziest reactions. And the fans have fought for him and been behind him for a very long time now, maybe not from the get-go. You know, not everybody has been a Daniel Bryan fan since he's been in WWE, but he has a lot of fans now. Most people who are into wrestling are a Daniel Bryan fan right now. you know, I wouldn't say everyone, but a high percentage are Daniel Bryan fans. So they want to see him enter the Royal Rumble, and they want to see him win, and they want to see him win the title at WrestleMania. That's what the people want right now. They want it to a degree of Stone Cold Steve Austin want. You know, I don't know about Hulk Hogan want because I wasn't there. I didn't watch wrestling back then because I wasn't alive. You know, maybe I was alive in like 88 when Hogan was still big. But, you know, I didn't watch wrestling when I was 1 or 3 or even 5. I started watching wrestling when I was 11. So I didn't know much of Hulk Hogan at that point, and I also didn't really watch WCW at that point. Because, you know, WWE just had that edge. They had Stone Cold, and that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see Stone Cold, and I wanted to see Stone Cold win and kick ass and basically stick up for the working man. And people feel the same way about Daniel Bryan. You know, maybe in a different way, not to the same degree. You know, maybe not in the same angle. But I feel like with the same passion and enthusiasm, because people want that. They want to cheer for the underdog or the guy who's sticking up for everyone else or just sticking up for himself. And that's what Daniel Bryan is. So if they don't put him in this Royal Rumble, they are idiots. And it's not going to kill Daniel Bryan's momentum, but it would be certainly a good way to keep that momentum going to the degree it is at right now. You know, they can't just keep throwing this guy back and hoping that this momentum will stick. Who knows, it could stick. You know, if he's not in the Rumble, he doesn't win the title. People could still be behind him, and they could still be saying, well, let's test him a little bit more with this, or test him a little bit more with that. I just listened to a Daniel Bryan interview, a radio interview, and the way he talks about it is pretty much like he doesn't say no to anything. They tell him what he's going to do. He goes out there, he tries to do the best job possible, and then he comes back to the dressing room. He works hard. He doesn't complain, and whatever happens to him happens organically, and that's what's going on right now. So if you want to see Daniel Bryan go further, you know, just keep chanting, keep cheering for him, and maybe he'll get there. Here's what I think will happen when it comes to Daniel Bryan with the Rumble. Daniel Bryan either gets his ass kicked or kicks Bray Wyatt's ass in the singles match, you know, and stands tall. Either or. Doesn't matter either way at this point. And then later on, fans are chanting for him during the Rumble. And he comes out. He comes out late in the match, maybe 27 to 30 or whatever. Doesn't matter. And he wins it. Crowd goes apeshit. And in Elimination Chamber, we have Brock, Cena, Orton, Batista. Maybe Kofi, Del Rio, Big Show, CM Punk, Dolph Ziggler, Damian Sandow. Any of those guys could be in there. Could also see Rob Van Dam or Jericho returning. Maybe at the Rumble itself, and then being in the Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship. And Brock goes on to win the title at that match, and he goes on to face Bryan at WrestleMania 30. Why not? You know, a lot of people are saying that Bryan wouldn't be convincing to take on Brock. I think that he could. Why not? People were saying the same about CM Punk. And look at how that turned out. They had a great match. So why couldn't Bryan, the best wrestler in the world, in a lot of people's opinions, and Brock Lesnar, one of the best as well, why couldn't they put on a great match, a convincing match, and tell a story at WrestleMania 30? And you could have your hugest babyface, yes, your hugest babyface, no matter what you say, Daniel Bryan is the biggest babyface in wrestling right now. Absolutely. It's not John Cena. It's not anyone else but Daniel Bryan. You could have him win at WrestleMania 30, take that title, and hold it high for the first time for real. And you could go out at your biggest pay-per-view of the year, the 30th time you have it, with the launch of your WWE network, standing tall and giving the fans what they want. I can definitely see that happening. Other options for Daniel Bryan, though. He defeats Wyatt at the Rumble, goes on to wrestle at Elimination Chamber, and somehow this Shawn Michaels angle comes back up, because this was apparently a plan. They were going to wrestle each other and feud at WrestleMania 30, but it's not going to happen now, but it still could happen. You know, anything could happen. Card is subject to change all the time. And another option is he has another match with Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with him at this point? You know, but if he's not in the Rumble, it will be a shame. Who else could we see in the Rumble at this point? We could see Sheamus returning from injury. We could see Rob Van Dam returning from his time off. We could see Chris Jericho returning. He keeps on saying that's not going to happen, but it could still happen. Anything can happen. You know, Dolph Ziggler hasn't been announced for the Royal Rumble yet. Maybe he's okay. Maybe he's good to go. We don't have Ryback in there. We don't have Curtis Axel in there. We don't have the Great Khali in there. We don't have Santino Marella in there. You know, we could have a bunch of shitty wrestlers in there to fill the space. Hopefully we don't, because they have a way of doing that. They have a very good roster right now, and if they just put in everyone that is remotely good or recognizable, without putting in a bunch of filler, we could have a very exciting Royal Rumble match. And why would they not want to do that for us? You know, sure, you want to get those contracted guys out there and have fans see them again, maybe just for a little bit, you know. Suffice those fans that are actually still fans of those guys. But we don't really need that. We could also have some NXT debuts. I mean, last year we had Bo Dallas coming out and eliminating Wade Barrett. You know, we could have Alexander Rusev, who's trying to break onto the main roster. You could have Sami Zayn. You could have Tyler Breeze. You could have Adrian Neville. So many guys from NXT could make their debut. I don't think a lot of them will, and if one of them does, I think it's going to be Alexander Rusev. But any of them could. And we could have also maybe Christian returning from injury. I could care less. I don't like Christian. That's a personal thing. If you guys like him, that's fine, but I don't like him at all. I mean, who else could we have at the Royal Rumble? We could have Sting, guys. There's a lot of talk about Sting. I don't think it's going to happen. If it does, I won't even be excited. I don't care at this point. Watching him in TNA for so long, I don't care about the man. I didn't care about him very much back in the day. You know, when I started watching WCW for the first time after, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so of watching WWE, I liked Sting a lot. He was mysterious and interesting and, you know, fun to watch. But at this point, man, just not interested. It's not even a nostalgia thing for me. If I want a nostalgia thing, I'll listen to the Stone Cold Steve Austin show. And I get more than nostalgia out of that anyway, because it's a very entertaining show. But some more booking things for the Royal Rumble. We went through Daniel Bryan winning. How about Roman Reigns winning the Royal Rumble? So if Reigns was to win the Rumble, and there was talk about this earlier this year, a month or so ago, and I don't think it's going to happen at this point, but if he did, how would the booking go? I would say he would then have a three-way title match at Elimination Chamber with Ambrose and Rollins for that U.S. title, win that title, but go on to fight either Brock or Orton or Batista at WrestleMania and lose that match, but get over as a babyface. That would be pretty interesting booking, pretty good, but I don't think it's going to happen. There's just so much going on right now. Batista winning the Royal Rumble. Everyone thinks this is going to happen. Well, not everyone. You know, every time I say that, I have to explain, not everyone. People are going to have a difference of opinion. But the majority of people think that Batista is going to win the Royal Rumble. And then he'll go on to face Brock or Orton at WrestleMania. If he doesn't, he faces Alberto Del Rio in Elimination Chamber. And then he faces Brock or Orton or Undertaker at WrestleMania in a non-title match. And also Brock could face Undertaker when it comes to Undertaker. And so could John Cena. All of those matches would be good. But I think Cena is the right move. Definitely. I think Undertaker and Cena is the right move. I think that Brock and Bryan, Cena and Undertaker, and Batista and Orton, I think those are the right moves when it comes down to it. I could go without seeing the Orton and Batista match, but if you got to have those guys in a match, you know, do it that way. I think. I cannot see CM Punk winning the Royal Rumble. Of course, he's starting at number one, and that will give him a good showing. He'll be probably the longest in the match. He will either wrestle Kane at Elimination Chamber, or he will be in the chamber match itself, I do believe. And then he'll go on to face Triple H at WrestleMania. And what will Bray Wyatt really do when it comes down to it after this Daniel Bryan match at the Royal Rumble? I've been wondering about this a lot, because if he doesn't keep this feud going, who's he going to feud with? How's he going to keep this momentum going? Because he's main event quality on the mic. We don't get to see a lot of him in the ring, but when he is in there, he definitely gives it his all. He's very different, strange, original, you know. Not in that way that Dean Ambrose is. Dean Ambrose is, he's got a certain style to him, but Bray Wyatt has this vicious, sadistic, weird, kind of creepy style, and he can take moves very well. He's a good sell. So I don't know what he's going to do after this if they don't keep this feud going. And I don't hear a lot of people worried about that because they're more focused on Daniel Bryan, but, you know, hopefully this guy keeps his momentum going. And that's, you know, the Royal Rumble booking. I mean, the other matches itself, you know, Brock versus Big Show. Brock will come out on top of that and look crazy. New Age Outlaws and the Rhodes Brothers. I think that the Rhodes Brothers will retain, and that's not quite the time for them to break up yet. You know, when it comes to Royal Rumble breakups happening during the Rumble or before the Rumble itself, I mean, we got a few tag teams in there. We got the Wyatt family minus Bray Wyatt. We got the Shield. We got Xavier Woods and R-Truth. We got the Usos and Cody and Goldust. And the Shield have been teased to break up, and so have Cody and Goldie. And Cody and Goldie have been the ones that have been teased more in the past week or two to break up. But it's been a longer thing with the Shield, and I think that it's time for that to happen. A lot of people don't want to see that happen because they like the Shield together as a unit. But I want all three of these guys to go their separate ways and start, you know, really branching out as stars. And I think that's what will happen in the Rumble. Because they're being booked strong right now, and I think everything will disintegrate at the Rumble. And if not the Rumble, Elimination Chamber. You know, we can only hope. And we can only hope that Cody and Goldust stay together for a while. Because, as I said before, Cody is developing as a babyface very well. And the only way he's going to keep doing that is either staying in this tag team, or turning babyface, or Goldust turning heel and him staying babyface, and then riding that out. But I don't think that would work for him, because Goldust is so fucking over that I can't even think of a way for him to be considered a heel if he turns heel. No one's going to boo this man unless they have some real good plot in here. Like, Cody's new wife is pregnant and Goldust performed an abortion or some fucking weird shit like that. That would be too off the wall, too not PG. So let's just scrap that and let's not talk about abortion. Moving on. That's the Rumble when it comes down to it. So I'm going to be live tweeting the event with you guys. I'm going to be talking about it. You know, my predictions aren't set in stone. I don't expect what I say to exactly happen, but that's just how I see things. So if you want to live tweet with me there, at LightsOutJones, twitter.com/LightsOutJones, to hear what I have to say about the show while it's happening. I don't know exactly if I'm going to be watching the whole show in real time, because we are at my girlfriend's place for the start of the show, and then we have to be in transit for a little bit of the show. So I might miss a little bit of the show live, but I'll be keeping up, you know, via the iPhone, my girlfriend's iPhone, as we're driving. So whatever's happening, you know, I'll be watching, or I'll be seeing what's going on. Regardless, I'm paying for the event, and I'm watching the event. And I'm really excited, personally. You know, the build-up hasn't been great, but the Rumble's always fun. Booking through the Rumble, Elimination Chamber, I talked about that match. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do yet, because it hasn't really been talked about or announced. You know, there have been rumors of Del Rio and Batista facing off against each other for that, but I don't know if that's going to happen now, because it seems to kind of fizzled out. But the Elimination Chamber match itself, if it is going to be a WWE World Heavyweight title match, you know, as I said before, I could see Brock, Cena, Orton, Batista, and Kofi in it. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And, you know, one more. You know, either Big Show, Del Rio, CM Punk, Dolph Ziggler, Damian Sandow. Any mix of those guys could be in this match, or, you know, RVD or Chris Jericho returning. So that could be a very exciting match with a lot of big guys, a lot of beasts, and maybe, you know, put a couple small guys in there, a couple smaller guys, and they could have a great match. But it's also been rumored that they're going to do an Intercontinental title Elimination Chamber match. I don't know who would want to see that, but it could be okay. On paper, it looks like shit. So you got Big E in there, and here are your options when it comes down to it. Fandango, Damian Sandow, Antonio Cesaro, Wade Barrett, The Miz, R-Truth, and maybe a Ziggler. If they really want to bury the guy, they can put him in an Elimination Chamber match for the Intercontinental title. You know, because he doesn't need that, and he's, you know, he's above that. I would be interested in a match like that, because of the, you know, the possible Sandow, Cesaro, and Barrett factor. Because I like all three of those guys, and Fandango. You know, I like all four of those guys, and I like Big E. But it just doesn't seem like the title is there yet for them to do that. But I would still watch it, and I would be excited at the effort. You know, that would be interesting to me, at least. And they could even do the same with the U.S. title, but I don't see enough contenders or enough defense of that title for them to do it. But they could still do it. And when it comes to the tag titles, I don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, it depends on who wins the Royal Rumble match or the pre-show match for those titles. If it's still Cody and Goldust holding them, they're probably just going to face somebody that they're going to beat. Real Americans. Or they could have a four-way. You know, let's do a four-way. Why don't we do something crazy when it comes to the tag titles? Why not? Let's have fun with it. But that's what I see leading into Elimination Chamber. A little bit more about the Rumble. You know, the surprises over the years. The Royal Rumble itself is exciting. And it's, you know, to some people, it is because of that option of 30 or 40 guys winning this Royal Rumble and going on to main event WrestleMania. You know, that is the main attraction at first when it comes to the Rumble. And then it's the fact that it's basically an all-star game, the who's who of WWE being in the same match all at once, or eventually all at once. But it's never that surprising who wins. And when it is, it's usually not a good surprise. You know, look, we've had Sheamus win, and I don't think that was very exciting or interesting to anyone. Look at the guy now. I mean, he's a good wrestler, don't get me wrong. He's very good, given the right program. I don't think he's quite learned how to get himself over in every situation. And I don't know if he can at this point. I think when it comes to that guy, it's first impressions are everything. When I first saw him, didn't like him. And I don't like him now. I don't hate the guy. I could care less. He wrestled some great matches with Daniel Bryan. He's wrestled a lot of good matches. But I just don't like the guy. You know, that's just a personal preference. And I think a lot of people feel that way. That's why he gets a mixed reaction or no reaction. And you also have Del Rio winning the 40-man Royal Rumble. Look at him now. And Mr. McMahon winning one year. These are not surprises. These are disappointments. But there have been some good surprises. You know, Chris Benoit winning the Royal Rumble. I'm not going to get into talking about Chris Benoit, but that was a good surprise. Rey Mysterio was a good surprise for a lot of people. Edge was a good surprise for a lot of people. I support a guy like Edge winning, just like I would support a guy like Dolph Ziggler or Antonio Cesaro or Daniel Bryan. They're all different guys and different points of their career, but I would support any of those guys winning the Royal Rumble. And then there comes your not stupid Royal Rumble win. There comes your typical Royal Rumble win, you know, like a John Cena winning or Triple H or Batista or a guy like that. You know, it happens and you kind of shrug your shoulders and you go, okay, he's going to main event WrestleMania. Probably would have happened if the Royal Rumble didn't exist. But then you got your fans are behind a guy and it would be stupid for him not to win. Your Stone Cold Steve Austin. Your Rock. You know, people like him. People want him to win. They want to hear that music hit and for him to throw everyone out so they can be excited for buying that WrestleMania. That's Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's The Rock. And that's Daniel Bryan. NXT this week was a pretty decent show. To start off, we had Adrian Neville facing off against Wesley Blake. This guy kind of reminds me of the Skip Sheffield gimmick, which Ryback first had back when he was down on NXT. This guy's been wrestling matches since October of last year, not on television. He came from Dory Funk's school and also wrestled in his promotion. He's been signed for a while to NXT, and he didn't look too bad in this match. Neville flipped around for a while. They did some chain wrestling. And what I like about Neville is he's starting to put his indie-style flips into the WWE style of wrestling, which is kind of restrictive and methodical. And everything, you're supposed to do everything with a purpose, basically. And the transition for an indie wrestler like Pac, like Adrian Neville, is kind of a hard thing to do. Two guys that are doing it very well right now are Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. They have a lot of potential, and they're starting to adjust to that style. I think the only downside of Neville is he's going to have a hard time getting over on the main roster with his look and his height. But we'll see what happens with him. He's doing very well lately. But yeah, Blake looked pretty good here. He didn't get a lot of offense in, a few punches and a little corner spot, But he takes moves well and he sells them well. So it's obvious that he was trained well at Dory Funk school. I don't know if he was trained by Dory Funk himself, but he doesn't look as green in this short match as some other NXT roster members. In the end, Neville took control and he hit his great red arrow for three. This move is just awesome. It looks fantastic. The more I see it, the more I want to wait to see it again because I don't want this move to get old. It's an awesome corkscrew splash off the top rope. If you haven't seen him do this yet, look it up on YouTube. It's great. Next, we had Xavier Woods and Rusev having a rematch for Rusev beating him on NXT a couple weeks ago. And, man, Rusev needs some new music. He's adjusting his look a little bit, and he's been on some house shows, and he's probably going to debut very soon on the main roster because they see a lot in this guy. The crowd is starting to turn on him on NXT, but, you know, they're a smart crowd. They're a smarky crowd, and who knows if this guy can get over on the main roster, but maybe they have something for him on the horizon when it comes to creative, and they're looking ahead with this guy because it's obvious they want to push him. He's a big guy, he's got a great look, and he's pretty good in the ring. I'm really glad we had Tensai there to translate Bulgarian for us during this match. Tensai was actually really funny on commentary this week. We had a nice enough of this guy sign in the front row of the crowd that popped up a couple times during this match. We get Fire Rusev chants as well. I thought that was pretty funny. I'm getting pretty sick of this smarky crowd on NXT, but, you know, sometimes they can be pretty funny. Xavier fought back for a while, and he hit a big sit-down running knee that looked awesome, and he got a two count. Rusev took control and got the accolade on him for a tap, and then he put it back in after the bell rang, and Sin Cara, of all people, or Sin Hunico, came down to rescue with a botched head scissors that flew Rusev out of the ring. Rusev was pissed. But why didn't Tensai help out here? I know he was helping us out a lot on commentary, but he did not come to save his friend who he was talking up for the entire match. A little strange. Maybe Tensai's getting a little lazy. Maybe he's getting a little comfortable on the commentary desk there. He didn't want to take off his glasses and trust Byron Saxton with him. I don't know. We had Cesaro and Parker come up next. I don't like CJ Parker. This was kind of a cool heel versus a shitty heel match. You know, Cesaro's at home in the NXT arena. I just hate the CJ Parker gimmick. I don't have a problem with the guy himself. He's not bad in the ring. He's pretty good. And he's good at his gimmick. It's just that his gimmick sucks. Another funny line from Tensai here. Patchouli oil made Tensai happy. That made me laugh pretty hard. Cesaro is so good at making simple things look great. You know, I talked about how when guys come down from the main roster to NXT, they're just larger than life, and Cesaro is the perfect example of that. He knows how to play to the small crowd, he knows how to play to the big crowd, and he knows how to make the small crowd just crumble in the palm of his hand. Just the simple things that he does, you know, the kicks, the chain wrestling, the rest holds, he makes look good. Parker gets a crossbody for a two count and then puts him in a fireman's carry and spins him around for a while, which just pisses off Cesaro, and he puts him in a Cesaro swing and then hits the neutralizer for three. Done. Good ending. Sami Zayn comes out on a crutch. He says he had a great 2013, but he wants redemption for the supposed match of the year, 2 out of 3 falls match with Antonio Cesaro, which he lost. You know, Sami did have a great 2013, but he also went for the NXT title and lost. So that didn't piss him off. What really means more to him is wrestling his old buddy, Antonio Cesaro, Claudio Castagnoli, and having another great match. I would agree. That title does not mean as much as having a match that people are going to remember for a long time. Cesaro walks down the walkway and grabs Sammy's mic, and he refuses to have a rematch with him and then tosses the mic away. Somehow, this guy still gets babyface pops because he's fucking awesome. That's why. Natalya comes out next with Bayley at her side to face Summer Rae, who has Sasha Banks again. Natty cuts an awkward promo here. She's not the worst on the mic. She sounds like a mom when she talks, you know. She's very neutral, and you're not sure what you're going to get when it comes to Natty. When she's on the show, when she's on Total Divas, she's kind of a bitch. But when she cuts a promo, she's like, I'm a tough girl, but also I respect you. And it doesn't work for her. She's not Bret Hart. It doesn't really work that way. She says her New Year's resolution is to get hungry and forget her manners. Ooh, I'm scared. What's she going to do, not use a napkin? Fuck me. They chain wrestle back and forth for a while. Summer Rae's getting a lot better every week. Natty gets backed in a corner, but she counters, and she does this awesome spot where Summer is sitting on her ass in the middle of the ring with her back to Natty, and Natty runs the ropes and steps over her back, onto her back, and then hits the ropes and comes back and drop kicks her in the face. It looked great, but Summer basically no-sells it, gets up and counters with a kick to her face for a two count. Good on you, Summer. They trade submissions back and forth, and Natty wins, countering a kick into a sharpshooter. This was a decent match. I enjoyed it. Enzo and Big Cass cut a promo backstage. and Enzo's in a wheelchair or a computer chair. I couldn't really tell here. He says he used to like living life on the edge, but now he has a broken leg, so he's just going to jump right off because unlike everyone else, he can fly. Incoherent and awesome, as always. Aiden comes in, and he calls them both Neanderthals, and Enzo doesn't know what that means. This guy is just great in his character. Cass says Aiden has taken cheap shot after cheap shot after cheap shot, and he's surprised that he hasn't gone home with the ugly girl yet. Pretty funny. Aiden decides to sing, and then Enzo leaves and runs over his foot with the wheelchair. Pretty good segment here. I enjoyed it a lot. Bo has a ceremony up next to celebrate his 224-day title run, and Adrian Neville decides to interrupt, thank God. It's sad when, you know, I'm liking Bo Dallas more and more every week. I don't hate him as much as I used to now. I'm starting to dislike him more because he's a heel and less because he sucks, and that's a good thing. He's definitely developing down there, and that's what developmental is for, I suppose. But it's sad when a guy comes out with not very much charisma as Neville. You know, I like Neville a lot in the ring. He sells me with his ring work, but he's kind of a strange-looking guy. I'm not going to hold that against him. There's not much he can do about that. And he's also very short. When he's standing in the ring with a guy like Bo Dallas, it just looks strange. Maybe I'll come around. Maybe it'll just take some time. I'm sure people felt the same way about Daniel Bryan and look at him. But when a guy like him comes out and I sigh of relief, that spells trouble for Bo Dallas. I don't know when this guy's title reign is going to end. But Neville interrupts, and he says he's out there on behalf of everyone, basically, in the world for Bo to shut up. We get a he's a wanker chant, which I thought was pretty funny. And he says he's going to take the belt from around his waist, and then Triple H interrupts on the big screen, announcing that in order for Neville to get another title shot, he has to last 4 minutes and 45 seconds in a match with Bo Dallas right now, because that's how long he lasted to get a title shot in the first place. Nice cohesive storyline. And their match will be right now. It starts. And the title match, if he lasts this long, will be on NXT Live on the WWE Network February 27th. So Neville ends up lasting 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Because they just fuck around for 4 minutes and 45 seconds. They run around, do some wrestling moves. Bo's wrestling in a suit. Just, you know, it was okay. Not too bad. But Neville stands tall after the match by doing the red arrow and grabbing the title. And I'm excited to see that match. I think it'll be a great match live TV. Obviously, they're not going to go live every week. I don't think so, because they have Raw talent down there that can really screw things up for them. But all in all, this was a good show. What I like about NXT is it goes fast. It goes smooth. It's not 3 hours with millions of commercials and millions of video packages that you don't want to see. If I had PVR, I'd feel a lot different about watching Raw and SmackDown and even Impact. But NXT is a breeze to watch. And if you guys don't watch it, you should definitely check it out. It's great. There's 3 or 4 short matches, maybe a long match in there. And there's actually some good promo work from these guys. And it's nice to see these guys coming up. These shows kind of remind me of shows that they used to have, like WWF Metal and stuff like that, that were breezy shows that would hold you over for wrestling for a few days.
Oh, no, Mike, no.
Kurt!
No, wow.
Come
no,
on, Kurt! Rethink this, Kurt! Kurt! Oh, God! Moonsault!
Part 2 of TNA's Genesis quote-unquote pay-per-view free show on Impact Wrestling on Spike TV was this week. Starting out with an opening promo car crash reality TV segment with the likes of Dixie Carter, Rockstar Spud, and Magnus. Really, really bad acting here. They were discussing this new investor and someone being in Sting's corner tonight via this new investor. So this was a career, basically, versus title match. Sting going for the World Heavyweight Championship. And if Magnus won, then Sting would not have his contract renewed by TNA. Because every year, Sting signs a new 1-year contract with TNA. We'll get a little bit into that later. But Magnus counters by making it a no disqualification match. So you know there's going to be a fucked finish or a bunch of run-ins. After that promo, Mike TNA decides to explain exactly what just happened in full. Because apparently TNA fans are stupid idiots. Or that was just an incoherent segment. Maybe it's a little bit of both, but, you know, give your fans a little bit of credit here, guys. So Magnus comes out to cut another promo to the 250 fans or so in attendance at this pay-per-view to explain what's going on, because it's not like they have a TitanTron to show their video packages. It's just fans are seeing what's going on in the ring. But he says Sting is not a man, and Sting comes out, and he alludes to how AJ Styles recently left the company in a very similar fashion foreshadowing what's going to happen at the end. I'll give TNA a lot of credit for the fact that they're not really swerving at this point. They're just very, very predictable. You know, it's I think something's going to happen, and it happens. The first time I watched the show, guys, I watched it live on Spike TV, and I thought it was really, really awful, and I felt kind of sad for the way I felt about this show. It made me not want to watch TNA again. And I was saying earlier this year that TNA had a little bit of a run, that some of their programming was better than WWE, and it goes back and forth like that. But the thing about TNA is they have to record a few shows in advance at the same venue on the same night. And if they do a string of shitty shows, there's nothing they can do to change that. They're not just going to throw it away and start again and re-record the segments. They have to keep it going. And I feel like these past few shows have been kind of like that. The past four or five shows have just been people phoning it in, waiting to go to the UK. But I rewatched the show tonight as I record this segment, and it wasn't as bad as I originally thought it was. It was still pretty bad. There was a couple of good spots, but all in all, it was not a very good show, and having to watch this show live with tons of ads, tons of commercials, and what, like, I don't know, 40 minutes of wrestling in a two-hour show, I was very disinterested. But giving it another chance, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. So Sting comes out, and he talks a bit for a while. And it's funny how Magnus has turned from a loser, constantly losing all of his matches, constantly underperforming, and he's turned into this cocky heel who thinks he can beat anybody. But really, he hasn't beat anybody clean yet. I guess that's consistent writing and the fact that Magnus still can't win a fucking match by himself. But man, it's pretty ridiculous. Sting knows what Magnus is up to. He knows what he's going to do before he does it. Does Sting have this power with everyone? Because if he did have this power with everyone, then he should have known that everyone was going to fuck with the match at the end. You know, if Sting, you know, looks into the future, looks into his crystal ball, and he sees what Magnus is going to do, why doesn't he see what everybody else is going to do? Apparently, I can't predict the future, and those who can are Sting. That's apparently what's going on here. So he goes on to say that Magnus didn't earn anything, and he's a paper champion. We get a paper champion chant. Magnus slaps Sting, so Sting brings the beat down a little bit, and then Rockstar's Butt and EC3 decide to slap him like little girls. Paper champion, paper slaps. Sting's getting his ass handed to him by his bud in EC3 in the corner, and Joe comes out to make the save. Samoa Joe comes out, who is apparently going to be in Sting's corner for his match. Cool. So Joe has something to do on a pay-per-view for once. Tanay and Taz suck at telling a story. They really sucked on this show at telling a story. Apparently, this is a big deal, this investor that's coming in, and they want to make it a main storyline, and they're going to keep this storyline going until October, I've heard. But Mike Tanay and Taz just sit there with their thumbs up their asses trying to make any sense of any story or even tell a story with a match. These men need new jobs. They need to move on. They need to retire. I can't stand listening to them. I heard that at a house show for TNA, they had anywhere from 150 to 250 fans in attendance this week or this weekend. And people have been posting a lot of pictures online of what the stadiums look like at TNA house shows and at TNA TV tapings. This company's in a lot of trouble. And this has been going on for a long time. It's not a new thing. But man, it's getting really ridiculous. And with people leaving, like Sting, AJ Styles, Jeff Jarrett, and even the kayfabe departure of Jeff Hardy, everyone knows that that's a work. But the fans that don't know that it's not a work, you know, the young kids that think that AJ Styles, Jeff Jarrett, well, they don't give a shit about Jeff Jarrett. AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, and Sting have all gone. Probably three of their favorites. Who do they got to look up to now? What's their reason to watch? If Sting shows up in WWE before WrestleMania or after WrestleMania, they're going to lose a lot of fans to WWE. All those stubborn fans, and I know there's some of you out there, that don't want to watch WWE, or they still watch WWE when they grin and bear it, so to speak, because they're TNA fans and because they love wrestling, I think a lot of you guys are going to turn if Sting shows up. So this company's got to do something really soon. Dixie sets up a match between Rockstar Spud and Joe. She says that Joe needs to be taken out so he can't be in the corner with Sting for the rest of the evening. And Spud is the one who's going to do it. The 80-pound Rockstar Spud is going to beat up the 400-pound Samoa Joe. Joe's not actually 400 pounds. But, and Spud's not 80 pounds. But, we all know what's going to happen here. And Tanae says it. Spud's going to get killed. Storm and Gunner for the briefcase on a pole match. Up next. Could not give less of a shit about these two guys. It's funny. These guys are in such a bitter feud right now. They used to be best pals, tag team partners. And, you know, I'm sorry about their damn luck. Now they are in a bitter feud. So what do they do when they get in the ring? First thing, they go for the briefcase for about 2 seconds. And then they go into headlocks and they run the ropes. If I was fighting with an old best friend of mine and we had the chance to kick the shit out of each other, even though I'm not a guy like that, I imagine I would be if I was a huge jacked up dude like these guys, I probably wouldn't be running the ropes and trying to go for body slams and arm drags and shit. But the thing about these guys, they wrestle no better than indie wrestlers, I think. Just from what I see in the ring of these guys, I think they are sloppy and they are weak and nothing that they do makes very much sense. They're bad actors. And they're not very good wrestlers. But that's just my opinion. That's how I personally feel about these guys when they're in the ring. Gunner has a pretty good look. James Storm's getting kind of heavy. So, I don't know. I don't see much in these guys. I don't see Gunner as a contender for a world heavyweight title. And I don't see it going anywhere. I don't see him as a convincing competitor for even Magnus at this point. Gunner hits a follow-away slam off the top rope. And it looks like shit. But Storm ups the ante by hitting a top rope head scissors that also looked like shit. So they trade the shitty moves back and forth. Storm goes for the briefcase and gets electric chaired off of the top and loses the briefcase. Therefore, no one has the briefcase. Storm is 2 feet away from the briefcase. He turns around, his eyes go real wide, and he tries as hard as he can to grab it, but not grab it. This man is literally a foot away from this championship match, and he can't even reach his arms out and grab it. How many beers did this guy have before he came to the ring? Come on. So Gunner jumps over him, grabs it, and then Storm just sadly goes to the back. He doesn't beat the guy down or try to fight with him more or keep this feud going. He just goes to the back like a sad sack of shit. This segment sucked. This match sucked. Kurt Angle talks about beating Bobby Roode with the Hall of Fame on the line for a little bit. Still, that makes no sense to me. And then later on, we'll skip ahead a little bit, then we'll skip back. He talked about Sting. And while he was talking to the camera, either Kurt is a great actor, which I'm starting to believe, or he is genuinely a sad man that Sting is leaving and Sting is gone and not coming back, because he acted the hell out of this segment. He's still got those sad eyes, and I'm not a big fan of sad Kurt Angle, because I like when he is fun and funny, but he's doing a real great job lately. He is the bright spot of this company. He really came back from his problems, and he really picked it up. The guy still scares the shit out of me in the ring. Saban and Aries for the X Division title. We get a recap of last week when they talk about Velvet agreeing to be in the cage. Why would she agree to be in this cage? You know, she's sad about how demeaning and ridiculous her and Saban's relationship have gotten, and so are we. But why would she agree to be in a cage at ringside? That's even more demeaning and stupid. Then we have her doing a YouTube vlog about receiving a package from Chris Saban, and in this package is a teddy bear and a lead pipe. So despite the fact that she's going to be in a cage beside the ring for this X Division title match, which no one could care about because they haven't built up the title for the longest time, she's also going to have this pipe. I don't know why she would agree to that. And of course she didn't. Later in this match, this was a typical standard match. Austin Aries is fucking awesome, as per usual, but putting him in shit like this doesn't really help him out. But Saban goes for the pipe, and he gets the bear instead. Pretty predictable. Aries takes advantage, and he grabs the bear. He does a dropkick off the top, and then another dropkick, and the bear flies out of his shorts. Hey, he put the bear in his shorts for some reason. I don't know, I guess it's a pedo bear now. But he hits the brainbuster in 3 count. End of that. New X Division champion. Great. Bromans come out next with Zema Ion, DJ Zema. Man, I cannot stand this character. You know, I liked the Bromance when they won the titles. I was excited for it because it was new guys with the titles, and I found them funny. I find the Bromance funny because they seem like a parody of a subculture that is very annoying. But they didn't play it over the top, and they were getting better in the ring, so I was okay with it. And then this asshole, DJ Zema Ion, came out and joined them. And I cannot stand this character. He is everything wrong with youth today. I say that as a 26-year-old, but dubstep is awful. This guy is awful, and he needs to shut up. Eric Young comes out and interrupts them. He does the beatdown for a little bit, and then the tables get turned, and Abyss comes out and makes the save. He destroys everyone. He goes for Eric Young. He has him up for the choke slam, or he's got him in his grasp, and then he stops and walks off. I like the development with Abyss and at Joe Park and Eric Young. I think it's fun. I think it's steadily written. It's kind of predictable, but I enjoy it. Spud gets killed by Samoa Joe. We all predicted that happened. Rockstar Spud's awesome. He's really good. He's also a bright spot for TNA right now. His acting, his subtleties, how ridiculous this little man is. He's great. Not much to say about this match, though. So let's talk about the main event for the evening, the title versus contract match. Sting, 54 years old. This man has been with this company for quite some time. He has never wrestled for the WWE. There are rumors of him going there now for the final little stint of his career so he can get in the Hall of Fame and retire. This man is in the TNA Hall of Fame, and Kurt Angle is wrestling for the Hall of Fame induction. If he loses to Bobby Roode, then he doesn't get the Hall of Fame induction. I guess we skip that. Let's talk about that first. So what happened in this match, we're going to go to the spot that everyone's been talking about, and this was posted on YouTube. When it was filmed, someone in the crowd got footage of Kurt Angle doing the moonsault off the top of the cage. And this is not old news, or this is old news. He's done this before. He's done the moonsault quite a few times, and he misses more often than he does. So he's in this match with Bobby Roode. He climbs up to the top. The spot was Bobby Roode got knocked off trying to climb up. And this knocked Roode out for enough time for Kurt Angle to escape or either do a moonsault off the cage. And of course, Kurt Angle is fucking insane. So he does the moonsault off the cage. And he bounces about a foot in the air when he misses and lands on his knee. This was horrifying. I hate when Kurt does stuff like this. Because he's old. And he's going to die one day. One day he's going to break his neck again. And he's going to die. Or he's just going to not be able to wrestle again. Or he's going to paralyze himself. Jesus Christ, I love the man to death. He's a great wrestler. He's amazing. Everything he does is great. But I just wish that he would take care of his body a little bit more. Because he's only got one. And it's already beat down. The man has no neck left. But in this match, they ended it with a split screen spot where both men were trying to escape Kurt Angle off the top of this cage and Bobby Roode out of the door. And they timed it so Kurt Angle hit the floor first. And the ref was kind of leading Bobby Roode to hit the floor after. So Kurt Angle won, finally. And hopefully these two guys can move on and wrestle other people. Even though they're great in the ring together, this was a pretty good match. It was the best match on the card. But, you know, it's getting a little much now with these guys wrestling each other. And Kurt has redeemed himself, so maybe he can move on to having confidence in himself again. But anyways, yes, the main event of Sting and Magnus. That's Jeremy Borash. Yeah, you guys like impressions? But let's not talk too much about the ring work here. Let's talk about the run-ins. Because the AJ Styles-Magnus title match a few weeks ago was awful, and it was one of the worst segments of the year, in my opinion. And this was very This was very similar to that. First of all, we had EC3 run out, and he got punked to the back by Joe. Joe just stared him down, and EC3 was a total pussy about it. And then Bad Influence come out and take out Samoa Joe, and then EC3 breaks up a Scorpion Deathlock in the ring. And then Joe takes out Bad Influence. Sting makes a comeback and tosses EC3 out of the ring. Joe does a suicide dive and kills everyone. And then DJ Zima Ion comes out and breaks a two count after the death drop. The bromans come out to save DJ Ion. Everyone starts attacking Sting, and Kurt Angle makes his way out. Fucking kills everyone. It looks awesome when he does it. And he fights them to the back, too, just to keep the story going in the background. This man is an extra, too. He's an extra in the background. That's how good this guy is. So he fights everyone to the back. Sting hits a superplex in the middle of the ring. Looked great. So Sting still got something. He even leaned in on a deathlock in this match. So this guy still got something, and maybe he'll show it if he goes to WWE. Anyways, Sting hits the superplex, goes for a cover, no ref, and then he gets a two count when the ref comes in. Goes for a Stinger splash in the corner, but the ref gets in the way, so there's no ref again. God fucking damn it. Then he gets in the deathlock. This is when he leaned into it. And there's no ref. So what are they supposed to do? Magnus hits his driver. Kind of looks like shit. I'm not a big fan of that if that's like his actual finishing move. Sting is down for a year on this driver. So long. I want to go back and count how long Sting was down for this shitty move. So Earl fucking Hebner comes out. And I can't even call the man Earl Hebner at this point. I have to call him Earl fucking Hebner because he's involved in all of these garbage finishes and he's so on the fence about it. If this was Dixie telling me to go out and count three and this was, you know, real and not kayfabe, you know, she's my fucking boss, I'd be out there and I'd count three. You know, Sting's going to go on and have a job somewhere else. Don't worry about the guy too much. He's old, but he's pretty talented and people like him. So Earl Hebner counts the three. And they tear up Sting's contract. So Sting is apparently pretty close to signing a deal with WWE. So this means, as I said before, we've had Jeff Jarrett leave. We've had Sting leave. We've had Jeff Hardy leave, but only kayfabe. He'll be back. The thing with Jeff Hardy is he can't go to the UK because of charges. Can't go overseas. So they just wrote him off the show for a little while. And then you have AJ Styles gone as well. Sting most likely headed to WWE. And apparently Jeff Jarrett's trying to start this new promotion, and AJ Styles is, like, first in line to be, you know, the face of that company. So what the fuck is going on with this company right now? You know, I calmed down since the first time I watched this show, and I was outraged that I had to spend 2 hours of my Thursday night watching this with all these commercials. If I didn't have the commercials, when I watch stuff like this the next day, if I download it, or something like that. I swear to God, I don't do that. But if I do, and I watch it the next day on my laptop or on my TV with no commercials and the freedom to be able to pause and skip where I want, I don't have a problem with it. I can laugh at the bad parts and I enjoy the really good parts. But when I have to sit through a 2-hour impact like this, live, I don't enjoy it. So I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to live tweet impact. I will watch it every week. But just not live, because it's not worth it to me. I enjoy watching Raw live. I enjoy watching NXT live, so to speak. But I don't enjoy watching stuff like this live, unless it gets better, and it will. And then I'll start watching live again. If a couple weeks are really good when I watch them the next day, then I will watch the next week live, and I will live tweet with you guys. But if it keeps on going like this... Yeah, that being said, I'll watch next week because they're live from, where is it, Scotland? That should be awesome. That should be a lot of fun to watch. Last thing I want to mention when it comes to TNA is the Wolves cut another promo on the show, the American Wolves. And man, it was awkward. You see, the difference between these guys going to WWE and going to TNA is this. This looked like an indie promo because it was an indie promo. It was an indie promo with TNA production values. Not very good. Hopefully these guys get more comfortable. And it looks like they're going to be a big part of the show because they're talking about this new investor, which TNA is going to drag the storyline of out until October, apparently, reports have said. So that's TNA for the week, and it wasn't very good. Hopefully next week is better. I'm going to stick with it, but I'm not going to stick with it live. Wrestling is hit or miss all of the time. So when it comes to the world of professional wrestling, that's pretty much all I wanted to talk about this week with you guys. Remember, the Royal Rumble is coming up in just a few hours if you're listening to this as it went up. So you can live tweet with me, twitter.com/LightsOutJones, @LightsOutJones. Send me your questions, justinchasejones@gmail.com. I will be watching most of the event live. We'll see what happens. There's going to be a little interval where I'm not watching live because I'll have to be driving. But I'm really excited for the show. Again, some reports have come out that Daniel Bryan is... talking more about the Rumble. And he's still not in the Rumble at this point. It's Sunday right now, and he hasn't been announced for the Rumble, but he's talking about it. He's talking about it like he's trying to get the fans behind him so they'll put him in there. And maybe that's storyline, maybe that's kayfabe, but I love it. I love when they do stuff like that. So I am predicting, final word, guys, Daniel Bryan in the Rumble. Daniel Bryan wins the Rumble. I'm going to say Orton retains. I'm going to say Brock wins against Big Show. And I'm going to say that Bray Wyatt beats Daniel Bryan down. And Cody and Goldust retain. So live tweet the event with me, guys. Again, twitter.com/LightsOutJones. Send me your questions, justinchasejones@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening this week. I had a lot of fun doing this show, even if I had a lot of bad things to say about TNA. But it's been a pretty good week for professional wrestling, and I'm really excited leading into Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania 30. So hopefully I'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week, guys.